This is Debo Samuel. You're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com and now I must say by Underdog.com, where you can go to UnderdogFantasy.com, use promo code ROSTER for a deposit bonus and match there up to $100. Get into some of these best ball tournaments with us, some of these best ball leagues, and of course, one of the things you're going to be doing in these best ball leagues is getting the jump on these rookies. Who better to bring on during this time of year, pre-draft, than just one of the all-time GOATs, man. A guy who I've known ever since I started doing this stuff, and a guy that's been around doing it for even before we were at the Senior Bowls and the Combines and all the rest. He is Matt Waldman. You can find him on Twitter. I think it's Matt Waldman RSP on Twitter.
Matt Waldman, yeah.
At Matt Waldman on Twitter and at mattwaldman.com. He is the publisher, the proprietor, the man behind the rookie scouting portfolio. Waldman, so good to have you, brother.
Hey, Alex, it's always great to be having a conversation with you about rookies and get a chance to chop it up like we do.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude, I have so much that I want to get to here with you. So I guess if it's okay, maybe if we could start out at wide receiver and talk about some of these guys, and I want to talk some running backs with you. That's sort of our main focus right now. And the first question that I would just like to ask you, when you look at the Ohio State guys, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, do you have a lean as far as the prospect that you like better? And what is it about each of those guys' game that stands out to you?
Yeah, they're both a lot of fun to watch. And they're both guys that I think have bright futures in the NFL. But Chris Olave is my top receiver on the board. And I'm a big fan of Olave. I think that he's such a smooth route runner. And the things that I love about his game is just that he's slightly more refined in the aspects of the game in terms of route running, releases, and tracking the football in a way where I think Garrett Wilson is spectacular and has that high upside because he makes amazing plays, but it's more amazing demonstrations of athletic ability that I think Olave is not as far away from Wilson as people realize, but he's a little more advanced. Whereas with Wilson, what I love about him is that he can make the tough catch, but some of the techniques that he uses to catch the ball in terms of, clapping his hands onto the ball, things that you see maybe a Cortland Sutton do where he drops the ball at times early in his career because he would put his hands together and try and catch it that way, rather than meeting his hands together at the catch point on the ball where it's just going to ensure it. That's a little more difficult to clap onto the ball and succeed in the NFL with the toughest catches that he makes right now against the Michigans of the world. But when he's facing, Buffalo or Kansas City or some of the top corners that he's going to see, that's where I'm worried about him a little bit. And patient corners who are physical with him tend to wrap him up more than Olave. So Olave to me is an excellent tracker of the football who does a great job of being able to not only determine when he has to go up for the ball, but he can wait and do some advanced tracking where he can look at two defenders converging on him and go, if I wait a beat later, it may be a little more difficult catch, but I can make that type of a move. So for me, they're both in the higher ends of my board, but it's just that with Wilson, I see that plus the Marquise Lee factor where Marquise Lee was a very good prospect, but he was the type of player that he trusted his athletic ability so much that he would be willing to lose 3 yards on a play that he was hoping to gain 70 on when you forsook like an easy 5-yard gain. Like he has the ball, turns upfield, wide open area in front of him, but he sees a defender that he's going to have to drop the pads on or get under. And instead he'll bounce it into leverage that's favorable to the defense and lose yardage on a play where all he needed was 5 yards and he was going to get 7, but he wants to go for the 70-yard gain. And it's like those things with Wilson, I'd just like to see him get a little better at, but he's in my top 5 easily. He's a terrific young player. The refinement is just more in favor of Olave.
The gear. And it's so funny. So first off, you and I have never had the same wide receiver one since I've been doing this. You're sometimes a little bit off the board, and that's why you're like the Yanni of this. You know how Yanni, they said like he wouldn't listen to any music. You know, he wouldn't listen to music because he didn't want it to influence his own music. He wanted to be completely original. I feel like you're sort of a Yanni of this draft evaluation, where you just come from you don't hear any of the same kind of hive mind stuff for Matt Waldman whenever he comes out of the basement with his RSPs. Like, you've been down there grinding it out. This is the first time that you and I have been like, Chris Olave is my wide receiver one as well. And it's been a long winding road to get there. But a lot of the things that you talked about, I mean, when it just came down to it, I said to myself, how many ways is this guy going to make me look dumb for having him as my wide receiver one? He's the most polished wide receiver in the class. He's the all time touchdown scoring leader as far as receiving touchdowns in Ohio State history. He goes in there and he runs the 4.39 in the 40. He has absolutely elite body control and field awareness. He's already a complete route runner. He's already ready to go. And people talk about, well, Garrett Wilson's younger. And then you look at their birth dates. It's like they're only 3 months apart as far as their age. Chris Olave is young for his grade. Garrett Wilson's old for his grade. Right. So it didn't like you're really gaining too much there. But Olave, I'm 100% on board with you there. I think it's really cool that it's really cool that he's your wide receiver one. With Garrett Wilson, though, you mentioned his hands, and I did notice that PFF had him. Whenever I watched him, and I saw the way that you talked about the hands catches and the clapping and stuff, it kind of reminded me a little bit about how Odell Beckham looked whenever he was coming out, the way that he would just always, it seemed like he would always, even if he didn't need to, would go out for the hands catches, extend from the body with the hands catches and stuff. You look at PFF, that caused Garrett Wilson six drops this year. Can you just say a little bit more about what you were saying about his hand positioning? Because I think a lot of people will look at him and say that he's, me as well, I look at him and I say, well, he looks like he's kind of a natural hands catcher, at least. It feels like he has strong hands. What is it about, is it just the kind of like, can you just explain why you don't necessarily like his technique when it comes to actually catching the football?
Sure, because it's great to extend to the earliest point to catch the ball. That's ideal. You want that most often, except in certain route target situations where maybe you need to allow it into you because you have defenders converging on you in a certain situation where maybe it's more at the belt line. But it's the basic rule with wide receiver coaching, which is when the ball is basically above the waistline, you'd like to attack it outward with your thumbs together, your fingertips together, and your hands. When you reach out, your hands are already together with the index finger and the thumbs meeting together in kind of like a diamond or a triangle. And so when you're meeting that ball, your fingertips catch that ball, and you have, when the ball is spinning at the RPMs it is, when you have 10 points of pressure hitting the ball with the level of nuance and control that human engineering allows for, right, you stop that spin very quickly. And if it bounces off any of them, it actually, the spin is a slower spin. So you get a softer tip. And that means the ball is kind of a softer bounce that you can catch. If it hits the palm of your hand, just throw a football against the wall and watch it like bounce off wildly and violently. It's because it's hitting a one surface that doesn't have that control to stop the spin. So what happens is that when you're clapping onto the ball, think of a little kid. And when you throw a ball to a little kid, they'll often like wildly bring their hands together and try and clap to catch it. And it usually goes through their hands, bounces off their forehead, and they either giggle or cry depending on how hard
they go
in
and cry to mom if they're like, my wuss little son out here.
That's that kind of thing that happens, you know? So what happens is that when players are unprepared for the moment, they default to what we all defaulted to when we were little kids. They clap because they don't have their hands out. So Olave, a lot of times, there's targets where either he's not sure of whether to use the underhand with the pinkies together.
Do you mean Olave or Wilson?
Wilson. Wilson doesn't, whether he's underhand with the pinkies together or overhand with that, he'll try and clap onto it, or he can't get his hands together to extend for it fully. And as a result, he's late trying to clap. And when you're trying to coordinate your hands coming together on the ball, as opposed to already meeting it, it's just a harder target to catch, especially when a defender is going to hit you or they're trying to, you're negotiating your position with that defender. And that's what happens with Wilson. And so what ends up happening is that he claps onto it. And then if he makes the catch, even still, he's still so concentrated on making that catch with the more difficult technique that the ball kind of is out away from his frame and he doesn't retract it enough time. He looks like someone who successfully did a math problem that they weren't sure they were going to get the right answer to. And they're holding it out there. And then I'm thinking a defender's going to, in the NFL, is going to swat that thing away more often than what he's experiencing now. Doesn't mean he's going to drop a ton of passes, but it's a higher risk quotient to where if you see him drop passes that he normally made in the Big Ten, it's going to be because of that type of thing. Cortland Sutton went through the same type of thing. Deontay Johnson went through it for a while. And it's just one of those things that it just slows him down from on the track of him meeting his physical potential and some of the things that he showed on tape that could make him a star. So that's the thing with the clap catching, and you'll see that clap type of catching with a lot of young players entering the league until they really work on it on their own to get that technique refined.
Well, and with Wilson too, just one other thing I'd notice is, like, you know, if you see his route running, or is it that we were there at the combine watching the receiver drills and Lucas Oil, and I noticed that even in the gauntlet drill, it's like Wilson he's so twitchy, he could be a little bit like unwieldy with his locomotion. You know, I think that there's a lot of that whole kind of stuff to his game. And I think what a lot of people say is like, look, he's so twitched up. It's like, look, there's so much promise there. But I think that really sheds a good light on as far as the hands issue. And it's kind of maybe a little bit of the same issue. It's just a little bit of a, because it isn't a lack of coordination. It's almost just like he's almost too twitched up.
Right? Yeah, it's playing out of control in a sense. Right. Everything's high end athletic. Mm-hmm. Think of like Kenyon Drake when he came out of Alabama as a runner. Like everything was jump cuts. Everything was like this very elongated, like athletic display. And then he went to Miami and he'd find himself jump cutting into the backside of his own lineman, trying to avoid penetration and knock himself down because he hit his head first into the butt of his blocker. Right. And he did that repeatedly in games because he didn't know how to move efficiently. Frank Gore, on the other hand, who lost two ACLs before he even made it to the NFL and became the annoying fantasy player at the end of his career, right, who annoyed fantasy people, sure, and probably sports bettors, but he was the most efficient runner. He was so efficient. He knew how to move with just small movements to make things work. And that's the difference between Olave and Wilson, is that Wilson's the dynamic guy that when you look at the highlights, you're like, wow, few people can do that. But really, fewer people can do the highly efficient thing that's under control and then also do the highly athletic thing. And Olave can do both, whereas Wilson only does one a little bit. He leans on the athletic ability right now. And in the NFL, you really have to refine it because you're going to start to face athletes who are just as good as you in the NFL.
Yeah, like the economy, or like the efficiency of motion meets explosion is kind of the Chris Olave thing.
Yeah.
So what about what? So, all right. So those guys are two at the very top. Are you in on Treylon Burks? Did his 4.55 at the combine do anything to you? Was that, and then, you know, he's just getting all the, he's getting all the compare. Everybody wants to compare everybody to Deebo Samuel now, as if everybody could be Deebo. I had Kyle Krabs on here and he thought that that whole thing was just so disrespectful to Deebo Samuel, just to think that anybody could kind of come in and be that guy. You've heard that. You've heard A.J. Brown tossed around in regards to Treylon Burks. Is that anything that you've seen? Are you into Treylon? What do you think about Treylon Burks out of Arkansas?
I'm into the idea that Treylon Burks can be a good, productive wide receiver in the NFL with the right fit. But on in terms of my rankings, he's a contributor-level player, meaning that if you put him on a field today, he can get you production in the right offense. But the guy I comp him to isn't, you know, I've joked that his that you could just call him Deebo Patterson or Cordero Samuel in the way that people are talking about him. But I'm more with Kyle in the sense that how many teams have Trent Williams, Kyle Juszczyk, and George Kittle to clear the way for you?
Yeah, right.
You know, Miami probably doesn't even have that, even with Teron Armstead. They still need a tight end and a fullback to execute what they're doing. And I don't think Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle are going to be blocking for you on the outside at the level Deebo Samuel can. So there's still some things missing, even if he winds up there. But Treylon Burks, to me, is much more Kenny Golladay than he is these other guys, which is a player that if you put him in the middle of the field, you match him up against nickel corners where his size and height and build-up speed are an advantage, he can win there, or against safeties where he can outrun them. But I see him more that way, whereas you think about Kenny Golladay in Detroit, he had, you know, Golden Tate on one side, Marvin Jones on the other. Those guys occupied top corners, and he got plum matchups. I think that that's what's going to take for Treylon Burks, because my biggest concern for him is that while Deebo Samuel also had trouble with press coverage early in his career, he was better at it than Treylon Burks is. Like, to me, Burks gets flummoxed if he can't be the hammer. And if you plant a guy, if you plant a defensive back on a slant route where he wants to break on the slant in off coverage, he doesn't know what to do other than try and run through the guy. And then he winds up in a situation where the quarterback's like, you're my first read. You can't figure out how to get off the press. I got to go to somebody else now. Or you're my second read, you know, off, or maybe the first read off of a design kind of look off. And it's really designed just for you. And you're not open because you can't get the, you know, you can't get around the guy in an efficient manner. And so he can catch well. You know, I think his he's improved in his ability to go up and get the ball, but and he has the skills to develop as a press player in terms of the footwork, the quickness, the hand usage, all those things I think can come together. But it's going to take him a little bit of time. But he's not as quick, not as fast as Deebo Samuel. And I don't think he's the route runner Deebo Samuel is either. So that's why I look at all of that and I think Kenny Golladay, a guy who wins on his physical skills and wins best when there's better receivers technically around him to draw away the top cover corners.
So we have Matt Waldman saying he's probably a little higher than consensus on Olave, maybe a little lower consensus on Garrett Wilson, maybe a little lower than consensus on Treylon Burks. And there's a million of these guys that you can find in the rookie scouting portfolio available at mattwaldman.com. He's practically giving this thing away, even with the inflation the way it is, man. This thing is still $21.95, and you get not only the just everything with all the player, like, I don't even, how many words and pages is, like, how many words is that thing? I don't even want to count,
yeah, but it's 1,014 pages this year. Yeah. It's 158 prospects, and okay. I'm devoting that much. Yeah, it's amazingly in depth.
So clearly there's a lot that we're not going to get to here. But so if you want to get it, make sure to go to mattwaldman.com, pick up the rookie scouting portfolio. This thing has been a staple as far as dynasty leagues, Debbie leagues, and for your redraft leagues and stuff, because post draft, that price also includes the update wherever Matt goes in and says, you know, here's the landing spot. Here are the, you know, this is how it looks now because the available targets, yada, yada, yada. You'll get all that insight from him, as well as also getting the newsletter. That's the Rookie Scouting Portfolio over at mattwaldman.com. Again, it's a great way to support Matt and to support just a truly special member of our fantasy football community. And so we'd ask you guys to mobilize, unite, go get that done over there at mattwaldman.com. All right, so let's see here. So I'm not saying you don't like those guys. I'm just saying, as far as the consensus, like we said, you come out, you have the earmuffs over your ears until this thing's out into the world. I'm wondering, who else you love besides, like, are you into Jahan Dotson maybe? Are you into George Pickens? What do you think about some of these guys? And then I'd also like to, maybe if I could just throw kind of a three pack out at you, maybe hear about Jameson Williams, if you're into him, or what people are saying about him is, you know, if he would have been able to test maybe on that new fast track in Indy, he would have been the one that wowed everybody with his speed.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's start with Jahan Dotson. I like him. I think he has, you know, I think at very least you can start him out in the slot, and I think get a lot of good work out of him that way with that quickness. He's a good route runner. He's very skilled in the sense that he understands who he is as an athlete and when to get out of the way of defenders as he makes the catch. He's got that kind of, you know, he's in the 170s range. So I don't mind a receiver who gets open, makes the catch, and just drops to the ground there in that case, because he's going to get open a lot for you. And he has a really good feel of how to set up defenders, and he can win on the outside because of his speed and his route running ability. He has a few little issues with his hands that with tracking some of these targets in the middle of the field where he can be a little late to get his hands out to catch the ball, and he winds up having to catch it too far into his body or even like over his head or behind his head on certain routes, but they're very isolated types of things that he'll be able to clean up. But he's a savvy player, and he reminds me a little bit of like T.Y. Hilton. When you take T.Y. Hilton and put him early in his career in the middle of the field, he was very helpful, and then he gradually worked his way to the outside and became a fine outside receiver for a guy his size. I think Jahan Dotson has a little bit of that to his game. Pickens, I wanted to really love, and I only like. I have him a little bit higher than Treylon Burks on my board. The thing with him, too, is he does a great job of being able to use his hand-eye coordination to make circus-style catches. But when you take a closer look at his game, you discovered that some of those circus style catches should have been what I'd call accountant style catches, meaning that they're not all that exciting. He should have made them a far less boring. He should have made them far more boring than they actually were. Because when you go up for some of these contested targets, what you want to see is a receiver jump straight up into the air, especially on, you know, back shoulder fades and on any type of underthrown ball where they get position early and make that jump early enough so that they can go straight in the air and catch at their highest point, and their back is then to the defender. Pickens, like a lot of guys who are younger, Colin Johnson was a good example of this at Texas. They kind of make this jump and go backwards because they jump late. And as a result, their chest gets exposed to the defender.
Matt knows just what he's talking about when he's whipping out this Colin Johnson. I saw that in practice every time, man. Who was the App State kid? Brian Quick. Brian Quick was another guy like that.
Exactly. And that's a great reference, Brian Quick. So, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, that it looks pretty if you're diving off a diving board, but when you got a defender at your back and you've opened up your chest to him, you've made your life harder. And Pickens makes his life harder in a lot of ways, off press, in body positioning, where he has to work harder than he should. I think he's earned a grade where I think he can contribute early on, but he's not in that top tier for me because he has a lot of little things to learn that when you're young, this is the element that we don't see a lot. We only hear about, which is when you're a young guy and you're, you know, early to mid 20s, you're still figuring things out. You're still figuring the world out. And now you're getting thrown a lot of cash and a lot of fame and a lot of high pressure. And do you know how to work? Do you know how to work smart? Do you know who to seek out to learn these things? Or are you going to have an immediate success, get a chance to enjoy the fruits of that success early on and think you've got it figured out? Then suddenly defenses have figured you out and you haven't been applying yourself in a steady fashion to continue to develop these tools. And that's where I think George Pickens is at, is like, he could be a star, but he's going to have to show all these things I mentioned for him to get there. And that's the question mark.
Did the 8 3 or did the sub 9-inch hands bother you at the comp? Was that anything that bothered you, or was that just kind of throwaway sort of?
Kind of a throwaway for me, as long as the hands techniques are good. And after, you know, listen, if you watch, you know, if you see some of those catches he made in Georgia practices, early in his career, you can put the pen down on whether or not that's going to be an issue.
What about Jameson Williams?
He's my number three receiver on the board. I'm a big fan of Williams. I think the idea that he compares to Jalen Waddle is still a bit of an aspirational comparison in my book, because my two highest graded receivers ever now are Ja'Marr Chase and Jalen Waddle. They were 1-2 for me. But
of all time in the RSP?
At least in the what I'd call my modern era of scoring. I'll put it
that way. So basically you've had a scoring system that's been tweaked over the years, but over the course of the last whatever how many years, like ever since it's tweaked to the way that you're using it right now, those are the two highest.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So Williams has a nice grade. It's immediate starter grade once he gets healthy. And I love the way that he attacks downhill as a runner. I think that, you know, he does a strong job in terms of, you know, with the routes that he does run, he runs very well.
He tries to get himself killed as a run blocker. You're like, come on, dude, go easy. You're going to get yourself hurt, man.
Yeah. He can be a little aggressive there. That's for sure. But I'm a big fan of what Williams has to offer. And I think that, you know, on the high side, certainly you would say Jalen Waddle is that guy, but in terms of talent. But, you know, another guy who comes to mind is DeSean Jackson. And from a fantasy perspective, as I was joking recently, that if you have a memory of more than 3 years in the fantasy space, which a lot of people don't, if you count up the number of times a receiver has had a top 12 wide receiver one season for fantasy, it's a small list of receivers over the past 14 to 16 years. And the two guys at the top are Julio and DeSean Jackson. And people forget that about DeSean Jackson. Yeah. He's had you think, oh, well, you know, he's always gotten hurt in recent years, but he's had more wide receiver one seasons than more. I think he's one of the top two, if not top three, out of like maybe 10 that I looked at over the past 15, 16 years. And the number that he had, you look at and you go, wow, most receivers who hit wide receiver one only do it two or three times in a long career. And then you realize, huh, maybe I should be looking at guys who are consistent, you know, in some level. So Jack, you know, the fact that Jameson Williams kind of fits in that area of a guy like Jackson or like Waddle, who they Jarvis Landry'd him in Miami this year out of need. And you didn't even get to see him be what he really is. You know, and he did it anyway. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we could talk for years about how awesome Jalen Waddle is. And I mean, yeah. But I'm mindful of your time, Matt, and I want to get onto some of these running backs. But before I do, I just got to ask, like, what wide receiver have I not thrown out at you here? I've kind of thrown out some of the ones. Basically, I've thrown out at you my top six. So like, who is it that I haven't mentioned that you're much higher on than maybe me or maybe can. Consensus. Is there anybody who we haven't mentioned who you really love?
I'll give you some quick hits in my top six that we didn't mention.
Okay.
Drake London. Listen, I know that speedsters get the top billing.
Let me just say this about Drake, okay. Drake London. The only reason he's not in the top six that I'm showing right now is because the model is still waiting for his 40 time. He was supposed to run his 40 today, and they pushed back his pro day to April 15th now. So I think Drake London probably he'll 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 surely be in the top six. I didn't want people to think that he's outside of my top six.
And I think that makes perfect sense. So, yeah, I mean, for me, London, you know, speedsters get that top billing with their draft capital, even in the NFL. You know, you think of Henry Ruggs, you think of a lot of players like that. But London was a guy that, you know, he could be that top hybrid outside-inside guy. You think of Juju Smith-Schuster. You think of T. Higgins, Michael Pittman to a degree. Mm-hmm. I think he's more T. Higgins than Michael Pittman. I think he's, you know, the way that he can go up and win the ball, he's very tough at the catch point. I think he runs good routes for his size, and he's a rugged player. So I like him. Justin Ross, listen.
Woo!
Listen, I am in on Justin Ross. And the reason, and I watched a ton of him, and Nick Martin, who's a Steelers guy, wrote me a while back, and I put this in the RSP, and he said, I think Justin Ross could be the Nick Chubb of the wide receivers of this class. And I love that comparison because, you know, I was a big Nick Chubb
You're
fan.
You're a big Nick Chubb dude.
Yeah. But the thing is I, because he saw one of my film rooms on Ross, and I thought, I don't see major differences pre and post injury from the neck in issue. And if he's mm-hmm. cleared for that, I was okay. The only issues I saw, and then I found out later why I saw them, was that he just seemed not very explosive in and out of some cuts and out of some breaks after he came back from the injury. He seemed to slip a little bit or not be able to get around defenders in a way that just didn't look very explosive. And then we come to find out he played all year on a Jones fracture, which is that bone on the, you know, your pinky toe all the way up and down your foot to, you know, your toe to your heel. And so he's been getting shot up all year long. And so then, you know, watched the film, saw a lot of really strong stuff as a route runner, in terms of positioning, in terms of what he could do after the catch before the injury. And I felt like that it was just the quarterback difference that was really a big issue with him, you know, this past year. But when you watch, when you look at it, you go, well, how long does the injury take to heal? Well, if you don't further screw it up all year long, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to heal. So the what they do to heal it after the surgery is you have to be immobilized for 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm sure he was maybe doing some water workouts or riding a bike, but you know, that hard kind of pounding that you have to do as a route runner and receiver and a sprinter, none of that was going on from like late November until mid-January. And that meant he had 6 weeks after being immobile to get ready for the combine. So if he ran a 4.56 and jumped 31 and a half inches 6 weeks after playing through a Jones fracture, I asked somebody I knew in the league who's a biomechanics expert and just said, listen, man, this is my theory. What is it valid or am I just blowing smoke? And he said, I'm very surprised that Justin Ross is even remotely running a 4.56 or jumping 31 and a half inches after an injury like that. It takes a long time to heal from that. And the fact that he did that, there's some smoke to that fire, you know, that could be there. So I'm betting that we're going to find some team's going to draft him and they either know that or they're going to hope for that. And by August, we're going to be hearing about he's much more explosive than we thought he was. So him and Christian Watson are high on my board. Watson is that highly athletic guy with a lot of upside talent. And I like Alex Pierce. I think Alec Pierce is a fun one too. And I'll add Khalil Shakir. Yeah. As a guy that kind of gives me that Deontay Johnson kind of vibe, in terms of what he could become. Some catch issues that are a little bit of an issue. And I'm just going to say this. I'm rooting for David Bell because I always like exceptions to the rule from the athletic standpoint. If he was just a little more athletic, he's kind of like the Devin Singletary of running backs. You know, it's like slow, not fast enough, not quick enough, but all he does is play great football. And I'm hoping that he can make that transition.
Yeah, for sure. And the Justin Ross stuff, I wasn't expecting that from a million miles out, but that's why. But here's the thing. It's like, if that does happen, like you said, Matt, and we get to training camp and people are saying like, he's more explosive than any of us knew and stuff like that. Other people might just look back and say like, well, you could have gone back and looked at his freshman tape. You could have just gone back and looked and seen that he was basically the sensation of all of college football. Like, you know, and then like you said, if you didn't see the technical stuff that was coming up between the neck injury, that was what made him need to almost consider retiring football, right? Like, yeah, there was a while where he thought he wasn't going to even play football anymore. So if you didn't see anything after that, that was the major injury. If he's cleared from that, you know, the other injury, you can recover from it. But just as you're playing through it, I mean, just imagine cutting off of that outside part. You have a stress fracture on the outside part of your foot. Imagine cutting off that.
You're not speed breaks, heart breaks. Imagine. You know, any lateral cut that you would make in the open field. And by halftime, that Toradol shot wore off.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to find out a lot more about these guys in the rookie scouting portfolio. We have two asks of Roster Watch Nation here. Please go to mattwaldman.com, download the rookie scouting portfolio, and get set up there. You're going to get everything emailed to you as far as these updates, as far as the newsletter, et cetera. And you're going to be able to hear about all the wide receivers that we didn't talk about. Also, we got to give a shout out to our new sponsor, Underdog. So when we talk about Underdog Fantasy, we say that the NFL draft season is underway. It might not be NFL season, but the draft season is underway, and you can already draft in 2022 fantasy leagues on Underdog Fantasy to win cash prizes. So through their slick mobile app and user-friendly site, you can join a league and draft a team in minutes. Plus, the folks at Underdog are going to help you get started with a deposit match of $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit with promo code ROSTER. So just visit Underdog Fantasy in the App Store, the Google Play Store, wherever. Sign up with the code ROSTER, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code ROSTER. All right, Matt. Running backs.
Yeah.
This is where we're going to make our money in Underdog Fantasy, is drafting these guys where they're going in the, you know, some of these guys are free at the very end of drafts. And I'd just like to hear from you quickly as I mentioned, I'm very mindful of your time, but if there is a way that you can describe the class as a whole, as far as these running backs, can you give a description? Just give your sort of lay of the land, because to me, when I talk about it, I feel like it might lack a little bit of sizzle right at the very top, but it feels like it's pretty deep with guys that could be good players. What do you think? How do you see the general lay of the land?
I think this is an underratedly strong class in a market where the demand for the running back position is low right now. And so there's a lot of guys who, you know, at first they might get labeled reserves or backups because that's how they start off due to their draft capital early on, and then emerge due to injury. And everybody's like, who was this guy on our roster? How did he's better than we thought, when actually they were good in the first place. But it's a fun cross section, because you have some bruisers in this group, you know, guys who can really run through contact. And then you also have some players who are some classic scat backs, maybe with a little more Austin Eckler-like upside if things were to work out. I don't think they're going to be that good, but, you know, along that aspirational line. And then you have a couple of, you know, I think you have 3 to 4 guys in this class who really are not completely developed, but could wind up developing on a level that they could be every bit as productive as the top 3 to 4 guys in this group.
All right. So whenever we talk about the at the very top, there's been some discussion, at least in the dynasty space, about running back one. And it feels like at this point in time, after Isaiah Spiller's pro day and after some of his jumps and the bad broad jump, bad vertical, bad 40 time, you know, is he hurt? Trash Man swears by it. He was there at the pro day. He thinks he's hurt. But it feels like Breece Hall and Kenny Walker, at least, is sort of the chalk at the very top. I'm just wondering your sort of thoughts on those guys, if you consider those guys at the top, and if you prefer one or the other, and maybe just your general book on those two, is they feel like they're going to be, you know, important parts, certainly key parts and integral parts of dynasty rookie drafts. But then also, once we figure out these teams, guys that people could be taking interest in redraft, just because they've generated so much buzz through this important part of the NFL news cycle.
No doubt. And I have Hall and Walker 1-2, and there's not much separating the two. I think that Hall is the more, how would I put it? He has the higher ceiling in terms of some of the things that he's capable of doing. I think his short area burst can be special at times. There's a bit of that kind of ability to to teleport past a linebacker in the hole who has the angle on him. And, you know, from a stop start type of position, that is really special. And he has good hands that can get better. His blocking is kind of more Jonathan Taylor-esque, the way Jonathan Taylor was at Wisconsin, which was artful dodger as opposed to actually like putting in the work. But Taylor fixed that, and most running backs do who are at that level. So I think Hall will as well. He makes everything look easy. And that's the thing about him that is kind of scary, because he's a glider who, with that burst, who, it's interesting when you watch Hall play, there's moments where, and when he makes a mistake and he gets kind of angry and becomes a little more determined almost, you see moments of him where you're going, nobody's going to bring that guy down. You know, he'll run through three or four people, but he has an all around game, makes it look easy. And, you know, even his recruiters, as Chad Ryder mentioned to me when we were having a conversation a few months ago, his recruiters, he hadn't gotten a scholarship, and the recruiters saw him and were like, who is this guy? It just looks too easy. Maybe we shouldn't sign him. And then they were like, what are we even thinking? You know, and they did, of course, and the rest is history. Walker to me feels safer, and I can't explain to you why he feels safer.
Well, he just looks like a better pure natural runner of the football. Yeah. I mean, that's my kind of troglodyte caveman way of saying it. But, I'm sure you know.
It's a good answer, and he reminds me of J.K. Dobbins and Ray Rice. If you look at that, in terms of size, in terms of the quickness, the patience level. They have the speed. He's smart. He can play in any scheme. Whereas I think Hall can give you zone and gap, but Walker can give you duo. And duo is a tough scheme to run because it's such a tight crease scheme. But he catches the ball well in terms of hand-eye coordination, and his blocking will get better. I mean, he picks up blitzes inside well. The multiple blitzes that come that try to confuse backs, that's where he gets confused a little bit here and there. But overall, both those backs, I would be very happy taking at the top of my board and be excited about them being able to deliver for an NFL team as no worse than a lead option by the end of this year, and probably the feature back within a year or two.
Yeah, Walker's just, I mean, like you mentioned, I'm wondering if you think that, because whenever we look at these Big Ten kind of volume backs, right? I wanted to go back and look at Melvin Gordon and just kind of see, because I remember there being this hit on him that they weren't sure that he was going to be able to be used on receiving downs because they were worried about his pass protection. And he was just this volume guy that was an in-between the tackles runner. And he's a good natural runner and stuff, but his pass pro is bad. Is he going to be able to be used on passing downs? Then he gets to the NFL, and it turns out it becomes like a strength. Like Melvin Gordon, for a good number of years, like, it was a real strength of his game in fantasy, how much he was used in the passing game. Like, so is the pass pro stuff that, like, from what you've watched about the pass pro stuff, how bad was it? And is it fixable? How long does it take to fix? Is this a one training camp fix? Do you think it even needs that? Do you even classify it as being as bad as some people talk about?
No, I don't classify it as bad. I think it's actually promising from what I saw, because what I'm looking for is the ability to set up in a balanced position, deliver a strike, and be able to control the defender at least long enough with your position and with where your hands are positioned, and do it in a way where you're not leaning forward and leading with your head and get knocked off balance. And Walker shows all that, and he shows the basic diagnostic skills that I'm looking for, and the things that are more advanced take about a season to learn, because again, you're going to have more advanced types of coverage and blitz looks that you're going to face in the NFL. And he has to be on the same page with his linemen and the different adjustments that are going on and the different audibles and things. That's what causes the problems, is the diagnostic end that they have to just acclimate to. And I think it takes about a year usually with most players. I think Walker will be just fine in that regard. I don't really have an issue with him as a pass blocker. And with the receiving game, with the volume guys, I've been like, I remember, I'm more of a put the pen down guy, as Mark Schofield would say, over at USA Today Wire. that, or USA TD wire, excuse me, is that, you know, if you see a running back show good hand-eye coordination, and they aren't an absolute liability as a route runner where they like stumble out of breaks and they can't keep their balance, that's good enough. So when I watch guys like Leonard Fournette and Melvin Gordon, I had high marks for them as potential receivers, or higher than the average, because I saw them make plays where they showed they could track the ball in an advanced level or make catches against contact, even if it was one or two catches, because it was enough. If you saw enough of the right things, you could put the pen down and say, we're good. And I think Kenneth Walker has that.
Right. Good, good. I love it. One other thing, as long as we're talking about Kenneth Walker, I want to give a shout out to this dude on Twitter, at Lineups and Chill. His name is James Garrard. We were talking earlier about, you know, just the size, 211. Is that going to be big enough to hold up? He tweeted back this chart of the number. It's funny you mentioned the number of kind of wide receiver one finishes for certain players. Well, this guy tweeted back at us the number of top 12, I guess, RB1 finishes for guys who he sorted in his Excel spreadsheet for, I guess, going back to, let's see, some basic filters is what he came up with, 220. So Clinton Portis had six top 12 finishes. Chris Johnson had six. LaShawn McCoy had six. Jamal Charles had five. Your guys, Maurice Jones-Drew and Ray Rice, who you compared Kenneth Walker to, had four and three. Aaron Jones has had three. Christian McCaffrey's had three. Devontae Freeman had three. So 211 pounds is not something that's going to keep you from being able to be a
that's
high
sweet
level
spot. Yeah, it's still in the sweet spot for me. Anything between, depending on this compensatory factors of speed and quickness, 205 is maybe the lowest end for me. And then, you know, you're talking about 235 probably being the highest end. But to me, the sweet spot is literally 210 to 225. If you're in that range, I'm good with you. Especially if you're shorter, if you're like 5'8", 5'9", and you're 210, 211, if you were 5'11", you know, that's a pretty good size. I would say, you know, you're just short. You're not small.
Let me toss another three pack here at you, just to guys that I'm kind of guys that I'm just interested to hear you talk about. You can talk about them in any order that you would like, but I would like to hear what you have to say about Isaiah Spiller, what you have to say about James Cook, and then my general hobby horse here. I want to know what everybody has to say about Damian Pierce after getting to watch him at the Senior Bowl. So if you have thoughts about those three in any order, man, I'd just love to hear what Matt Waldman's book on those guys says.
Spiller grew on me. When I first watched him, I saw some issues like his pads weren't aligned with his hips and he'd get knocked backwards after having a running start into a defensive back, and that kind of scared me. And then I'd see him make some really fundamental mistakes with how to follow and set up a pulling block on counter, where I just go, what are you doing? Like, you know, my buddy Jay Moyer, who used to write for me, who's great on Twitter and does a, was a running game coach for high schools out in the Bay Area, would say, you know, I'd bench a kid temporarily for some of the mistakes he made. But here's the thing. He's worked on his footwork for a very long time, and he's very proficient with a lot of solutions with that. I think he's a very good outside zone runner. I think that he can be, or can become one. I think most of his gaps game skills are good. He just has to understand that he's not going to out-athlete people anymore, that he has to use that footwork to his advantage and bounce plays inside and set up blocks the way he needs to, rather than take the easy, let me outrun people to the edge. But I like him. I would say I think of Ryan Matthews at his best. Or Deuce McAllister, if he like really blows out of the box and he's much faster than what the times show. I think he fits in that range of type of player, where I think the refined footwork, even if he is as slow as it looked and lacked the explosion that it showed and it wasn't an injury, he's still quick enough. He's still refined enough in what he can do that I like him. So he's third on my board, and I wasn't sure he was going to be that high, but he wound up that way. Then you had, let's see, you asked me about
Pierce and James Cook. Yeah,
James Cook. James Cook is probably the most intriguing running back in this class, just from the standpoint of you watch certain plays and you see a little bit of Chris Johnson in him, where he can really bend around and make hard cuts and get away from defenders in tight space and get downhill and set up his blocks in ways that you're like, maybe he can subsist inside the tackles. He's not as rugged as Chris Johnson, not remotely, but he has the movement skills that are very strong. Obviously, he's a tough receiver. He can make catches over the middle and take hits, and he can win deep for you. And he has the acceleration you're looking for to be able to make big plays. I don't have him ranked high enough to say that he is, a legit, starting back in this league early on in his career. But he's, again, in that contributor level where I'd say if Nyheim Hines – you saw Nyheim Hines with the Colts, and when he gets on the field, he can be a very dangerous part of an offense and be helpful. I think he's better than Nyheim Hines, but I've got him somewhere like if Chris Johnson is like everything goes unbelievable for him, I don't even see him getting there. He'd still be looking up at Chris Johnson, but maybe he could get close to Eric Metcalf. When Eric Metcalf back in the day with the Browns was the way he was. So I think he's kind of an aspiring Eric Metcalf in that sense. For me, he's more of a contributor than he is a starter. And Pierce is so much fun to watch. Any dude who, is as rough and tumble as he is. And he has some of the best hand-eye coordination as a pass catcher in this class. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can throw him contested targets and he'll win them. And as a blocker, he's a rugged blocker. I want to see him learn to block without leading with his head and trying to blow people up the way, leave his feet to do it. Right. But the skills are there for him to get there. The running is very sharp. Like he makes sharp transitional cuts downhill from an outside approach to a downhill approach. He understands how to use his pads. His burst was better than I think people may have expected who were down on him a bit, but the speed is good enough. I still think he's a little bit of a higher floor, lower ceiling prospect for my taste. But again, I have him still at a level where I think he will come in, be a good contributor early, and have a shot to be the lead back in a committee, if not the starter. And when I think of a player that he compares to, maybe not quite as explosive, but Marion Barber, I think of Marion Barber.
Mine is Darius Geis. It's kind of similar players. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. And so like if Carlos Hyde's on the low end, I think he's a little better than what Carlos Hyde has shown. And Carlos Hyde showed some pretty good stuff early on in his career.
Oh, yeah.
I think he can be around Carlos Hyde, maybe a little better, and then maybe get to Marion the Barbarian. We'll see.
Yeah, Marion the Barbarian. Love it. All right. So I'm going to have one more question for you, Matt, and I'm going to ask you after I give this quick plug for mattwallman.com again. I'm just going to ask you, any running back we haven't talked about who you think we need to highlight, somebody you love, maybe an off-the-radar guy, whoever it is that you'd like to talk about going out. But before we do, just again, want to remind you guys to please go to mattwallman.com, get the rookie scouting portfolio. You can get it. It's just $21.95. I mean, it's like the work that goes into this thing, he should be charging literally five times that, but he's charging $21.95 to keep it affordable for anybody that wants it in the fantasy space. Also, over the course of the last decade, he's donated like $50,000 to ending child abuse. And
Darkness to Light is the organization.
Darkness to Light. So a lot of this stuff going to a good cause, but the money going to Matt in itself is a good cause. You're really, truly helping to support, Matt keeping the lights on and keep, like, he's a resource that we need in the fantasy community. So please, please, please go there to mattwallman.com, download the rookie scouting portfolio. Also go to Underdog Fantasy, use that promo code roster. help keep the lights on here around our house. All right. So with all that said, again, you can find him on Twitter at Matt Waldman. Go give him a follow, Matt. So just heading out, let's talk about one of your favorite rookie running backs, somebody that you're higher on than somebody else, anybody you'd like to highlight before we get out of here.
Well, I'd love to be able to go into depth of guys like Isaiah Pacheco and Keontae Ingram, because I like a lot of their games. Mm-hmm. But the guy who just, he does it for me when I watch him play, and he had a better combine than I think a lot of people expected from him is Kennedy Brooks. Kennedy Brooks, to me, is the most patient runner in this class. He's the most subtle, conceptually skilled guy of the backs that I've seen. He makes reads pre-snap that a lot of backs don't make. Like, he understands the box counts, looks at pre-snap and goes, this is where I'm going to have to cut it back. This is how I'm going to have to set it up. And he does it extremely well. And I remember talking to DeMarco Murray when DeMarco Murray was at the Senior Bowl trying to get into the NFL. And DeMarco Murray is now, you know, coaching guys like Kennedy Brooks and Ramondre Stevenson and Eric Gray. And he's seen a lot of these backs, Trey Sermon, you know, saw a lot of these guys. And, you know, the way he liked to describe it was Kennedy Brooks was the type of guy that he was never impressive as an athlete, but he kept just somehow keeping his position on the field as our starter because of how he played. And it's because the footwork, the diagnostic skill, the contact balance, the ability to avoid angles at the last minute with just the smallest move and feel. And the fact that he ran a 4.59 40 was a surprise. I think a lot of people were thinking he was like a 4.65 4.7 guy. And a 4.4 20 shuttle and 7.3 cone drill, that's quick enough. 36 vertical. All those things are good. And at 5.11 209, listen, he's kind of in that realm of, you could say, is he like a Bilal Powell, a long-term kind of like second or third back, you know, second back who could play on third downs but also help you out if you need him to run the ball on an every down basis, or a James White who does everything really well enough but is like a dynamic outlet back? Or does he have growth potential to get maybe another 5 to 6 pounds heavier? And with what he looks like right here and how well he plays, could he become a lead back in the league? I don't know. Like, as my buddy Chad would say, he said he's all juice, no squeeze in terms of his game because of the athletic component. But if there's a back that if someone gave me money and said, you know what, you can't do anything with this but bet on something wild. And I would say the wild bet I would make, if there were a way to bet on it, I would say if there's a player who could become the next Terrell Davis type of player to come out of a draft class who would just like completely shock people because he doesn't look like anything special, but all he does is get yards and like and break plays that you wouldn't expect. Kennedy Brooks is just, there's something there with that guy. I'm fast. I hope that it happens for him because he's just, in terms of what it takes right here to play the game, he has it.